and friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I are tuned into the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Nice, lined up, I like it. This is Tim and Friends for March 31st, 2023. 8 more shows, including the next 90 minutes of whole grain goodness. Gonna feel tougher than, well, tougher than a marriage proposal at Dodger Stadium, apparently. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, Jesse.
Yeah, well, what does he expect? What does he expect is gonna happen here?
Boom. What?
She's gone.
She's there. You're upset about this, Jesse.
Unbelievable tackle.
There it is. Well, hold on. Hold on a second. Like, 15 yards, unnecessary roughness. He was kneeling out the clock, Jesse.
I think that they tell...
like, what are we doing?
I don't know for sure, but I have a feeling, having seen tackles like this multiple times now by security, I think they tell them that if there's a fan on the field, you have free rein to just unleash on them.
I would suggest to you the opposite is true. That more often than not, when someone ends up on the field, there's not a great tackle. The only reason there was a great tackle in this spot was because he was kneeling.
Right.
To at, like, there's, this has got to be a TikToker, right? Like, this is, like, he had to know it would end badly if you're running on the field to give a marriage proposal. Like, I know immediately you were upset with this.
No, he was probably actually proposing. Like, that was real, but you have to know what's coming. Like, in today's day and age, you are going to get blown up. And he got blown up.
Like, you knew he would. Hit. Call the crib, same number, same hood.
Did the ring go flying? I didn't really
it's
look that
It's all good.
Closely.
Did the That's ring go- why I think it was a TikTok thing. I was going to throw a flag on all of this here. Just
yeah, you,
Canadian
you,
rules here.
This
yeah,
is, 15 yeah, you, yards, you don't believe anything anymore. Roughness. You think everything's for
no, no, the flag is for unnecessary roughness. He's on a knee. Just grab him and handcuff him. You yeah. didn't need to drill him. Though, I will say this. If you are on the field, you are a fair game.
Yeah, it's a deterrent.
Yeah.
It's a deterrent, right?
Because
now
the next
person that wants to do something stupid like this, you know you're going to get crushed. Urlacher coming across the middle.
Do you really think it's a deterrent? Do you really believe that?
People seem to forget that it's a deterrent
all the
when
time.
You have like a few beers in your or whatever you're like, drinking yeah. at the game.
When you're hammered.
Yeah, exactly.
And you decide that the,
you're not thinking about
the
that.
Proposal's not good enough about- in the stands. I'm going to go to yeah. center field with my Mookie Betts jersey on and ask you to marry me and then get blown.
Proposals at games are bad enough as it is, like yeah, outside cut. Of the playing field. Mm-hmm. So just stop altogether. Like, don't do it. Do it privately.
Yeah, there's a few. I'll take a few exceptions to the rule, but the vast majority of yes. proposals at a sports event
yeah.
are cut.
Overplayed. Yeah, cut.
yeah,
cut. See you later.
All right. Today, can the Oilers take top spot in the Pacific? Can the Raptors take top spot in, I guess, the play-in? And after a remarkably entertaining game number one, can the Jays claim top spot in the American League East? We will try to get to it all. As always, we do it with a little help from our friends. Ricky Romero in the first hour, Alvin Williams in the second hour, and Jesse Rubinoff through the whole damn thing with a match game rolling out on Twitter. And, of course, first things first on the horizon. Going to be one of those days as we take you to Hockey Central. It is the Rangers and Sabres on Sportsnet and big games for the Jets and Flames. We will go to the rinks in both Vancouver and Winnipeg, check in with Ryan Leslie and Sean Reynolds, respectively. All coming up on this edition of Tim and Friends. But we begin the festivities, as we always do, with Jesse, Biggie, and what everyone's talking about in First Things First. So let's start the pitch, Morris Lukowich.
First things first.
All right, I feel like we're going to spend the majority of First Things First on what we saw yesterday. An eventful opening day for those Toronto Blue Jays in St. Louis. 19 runs on 34 hits, a combined 14 pitchers, and 384 pitches in a back-and-forth game that lasted 3 hours and 38 minutes. Pitch clock couldn't help that one. In the end, the Blue Jays came out on top 10-9. No shortage of talking points, obviously, in this one. What stood out to you, Timmy?
A lot stood out to me. Ken Reed and I were on after the game, and I had at least 2 pages of notes on talking points that could have been and would have been parts of the story had it ended differently, especially if the Jays were on the other end. Mm-hmm. One of them being the bullpen, one of them being Tim Mazza, and why in the good name of Dave Steeb did he pitch to Nolan Arenado when first base was open? Dalton Varsho, good start. Was Manoah too amped? Did Bo Bichette's defense play a factor in what could have been a Jays loss? But I thought the little things that were promised over the offseason were delivered upon. Whether it was the Varsho at bat in the first inning where he battled, then came through with an RBI. Whether it was him cutting off a ball in left field and holding someone to just a single instead of allowing another runner in scoring position, throwing home on a guy that you weren't going to get anyway. But my favorite, Jesse, out of all the little things that we saw, and listen, there was a bunch in a 10-9 game, and all these things mattered. But my favorite had to be Kevin Kiermaier in the ninth inning, going first to third on a single to left field in the ninth that sets up Vladdy's sacrifice fly to win it all. And it wasn't just he was going on the pitch. This was a pure read. You can see him on the right side of your screen. Kevin Kiermaier slowly watching as he made his way towards second base and then reading that it was going to fall. Now, if shortstop throws to second, he could be DOA, but it was one, the read, two, the aggressiveness, and three, the speed. And because of it, the Jays win the game.
Oh, like, yeah.
That's a great read, and these are the things that we were promised in the offseason. Things like base running. Mm-hmm. And when you compare that to who's no longer here, the gulf between the two is pretty evident.
You know, last year when the Jays had the offense that they did, it never felt like they were out of a game. Like, you always had that big swing potential, right? The three-run homer, and we saw that a lot. But watching the game yesterday, it felt like maybe they're not going to be out of any games either. It's just going to be different. It's just going to be different how you score those runs, the manufacturing of runs. And it's nice to be able to say that about a Toronto Blue Jays team now, that it feels that they actually have the ability to manufacture runs. And part of that is the instincts that you saw yesterday that you're alluding to that maybe weren't there in years past.
Yeah, and listen, you brought up the home run. I mean, how often do you win a game 10-9 without hitting a home run? But that's exactly what the Jays did last night. And let me just say this, too. You're not going to get George Springer in the top of that lineup to look as good as it did.
That was ridiculous.
Every game. And they had a little bit of luck with batted balls in play, without a doubt, because they were just laying bats out there, yeah. Vladdy against George. I mean, Vladdy's sack fly, by the way. Can I be impressed by a sack fly?
For sure.
Yeah, here's Springer and his numbers. They were unbelievable. The top of the order was unbelievable. But even Vladdy's sack fly, where he just lays a bat out there and takes it to deep center field, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I thought Jordan Romano, like you mentioned it, there was 384 pitches in this game thrown. Mm-hmm. Only 12 of them came from Jordan Romano, who after all the chaos came in and did what Jordan Romano does, and that is tidy. 12 pitches, 9 strikes, 2 Ks, 3 up, 3 down, avoids the real meat of that order, the MVP and the MVP runner-up, or second runner-up. In Nolan Arenado. He avoids both and does his job. So in the midst of all that from the Jays bullpen, who used everybody but Trevor Richards, it was nice to see Jordan Romano back on 36 saves last year, and he looked really good in this one.
Anything you want to nitpick on? I know they won the game 10-9, and we don't need to be come in here and be negative, but is there anything
that I don't want to do the first game, holy crap, but
that's
we only
fine.
Have 8
that's
shows
fine.
Left.
That's fine. So yeah. Get it all out now.
Yeah, but I'll just say this. If they had a loss, Bo Bichette's defense would have been a much bigger story than it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one game, but that doesn't seem like it's changed much.
Well, it was one at bat.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
First batter of the game. And I know you're hyped. And this is, but there's your first error on the first batter of the game.
Yeah, it's just.
And Donovan had a game too, but whatever.
I think we'll see how that plays out. What I was trying to, I think, get you to say was, are you worried at all about Manoah? And I think the answer is probably no.
Oh, Manoah.
Yeah, no.
I wonder if he was just too amped up. And Miles Mikolas didn't do anything either.
No.
Both of them lasted just 3 1/3. I mean, listen, There are those who want to point back to last year and Jose Berríos getting the opening day start, struggling, although it's a lot different to go a third than 3 1/3.
Yeah.
But I'm not there yet on Manoah. The guy's, what, like 25-9 as a starter with the Toronto Blue Jays?
He'll be okay.
Yeah, I think he'll be okay. He had, I think this is the fifth time in his 52 career starts that he didn't go five innings. Just the fifth time in 52 career starts. He was second in the majors in quality starts last year. Usually what you get from that dude is horse-like tendencies from a pitcher. And I'm not all that worried based on what is still a young career, but still 51 starts of a sample size.
Yeah, just some of the things that maybe people were worried about, the velocity, that ended up near the end of the game being there. It was totally fine. So it's just one start.
Even harder than he was throwing last year at times.
Crazy
which
at
is
times.
Which made me think, like, did he get too amped up like we may have saw in the playoffs last year when he got the start?
Before we get to the goings-on and around the rest of baseball on what was a crazy opening day, do you not think that the 10-9 game with all of those numbers that I hit you with in the question, do you not think that that was like the greatest advertisement for what they're trying to move baseball towards in terms of the game?
Yeah.
The game may
solid
have
point.
Been, it may have been three hours and whatever it is, 3.5 hours, but you're watching a game, you were never bored for any second. It was action all of the time.
Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking the same thing, and I will take the point, very valid, and I'm not trying to dismiss it in any way. But like Tampa 4-0 win, the Twins had a 2-0 win, and it wasn't all that. There was tons of action in this game. There wasn't tons of action around Major League Baseball, but the difference was all the moves, right? And is that what you're looking for?
Yeah.
What are you doing with your lip there?
I was just biting
You're biting your lip?
Yeah, I was biting it. I don't know why.
Is that your sexy look?
Yeah.
Is that how you used to dance in the clubs?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah?
I was being a little flirtatious
when Jesse was 22 at Western and at the Seeps?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, biting that upper lip?
29 Park. 29 Park. So I don't think it exists anymore.
They call that the white man overbite.
That's
whatever.
Right. Exactly right.
Yeah. Why are you doing it to me?
I think I was just thinking. I think sometimes it just hits me when I'm thinking, but it's all right. Yeah. I don't think I'm thinking.
I'm going to tell you, it was attractive. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I'm not going to repeat it. But,
So I get your point to move on very quickly from what was a seductive look that I received from Jesse Rubinoff. They've moved this along. We'll see when it matters most, if it changes at all, because I still think that sometimes we're going to see guys rushing when they don't want to rush.
Yeah. Manoah had a couple pitches yesterday where I thought
this was a rush.
Probably would have liked to slow it down a little bit there and got a little dicey. But again, they're getting used to it. It's all good. Anything else around the majors?
Yeah, some great stories across Major League Baseball. Obviously, Aaron Judge, first at bat, first home run of the season goes to the guy that just had the monumental season. Very cool to see, even if he is in the team that most of the people who watch this show's favorite team's division. I got a long way to say he's in the American League East, and most of you are Jays fans. But that was still cool to see. If you're just a fan, to see him go deep in his first at-bat of the season and be the first big leaguer to go deep in the 2023 season. And like from the start of the afternoon in New York to the end of the night and Shohei Ohtani doing Shohei Ohtani-like things. He goes 6 strong, allows just 2 hits and 10 Ks versus the A's, yet they still lose 2-1.
Yeah, I don't understand this. I mean, I do. I get why. Yeah, I get why it's
the rest
happening.
Of the team outside of Trout and maybe a couple other guys who should be better are horrendous.
I know, but how does this happen every year? Like, there's two, not one, but 2 generational talents on that team, which is a rarity in sports to have 2 on the same team, and they're just wasting them.
2 of the very, like, where have we
literally
ever
of
seen
all time.
This? Of all time, and their team sucks.
Yeah,
it's
like
having crazy.
LeBron and Michael on the same team, and they were and they're bad. Would that ever happen? No, it's just, it doesn't.
Well,
baseball's different.
Yeah,
because you don't have the same impact. Although he had 6 shutout innings.
You might have some folks in Calgary saying the Edmonton Oilers until this year.
Yeah. Just got a phone call.
Oh, nice.
Why?
Could be.
I'm on TV.
Was it that guy Likely Fraud again?
It was a fraud, 100%.
It was Likely Fraud, yeah. Have you ever got the listing Likely Fraud? Or is that just Rogers that gives it to
you? No, the reason I looked is because the last name was like, it looked like Manoah. So I was like, uh-oh, did I say something bad about Manoah that his family's calling me right now?
They don't have your number.
No, they don't.
Did you see the Hunter Renfrow catch?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so this is in the fifth. Jace Peterson with an absolute drive. And Hunter Renfrow ends up with a ninja-like catch in right field. Now, I believe it's not how you start, it's how you finish. But can it be three things at once, Jesse Rubinoff? Mm-hmm. Can it be bad, amazing, and lucky all at once?
Yeah, I think it actually can. Like, there aren't many plays that could fall under all three of those, but this is one of them. Like,
terrible route.
Bad.
Right?
Bad.
Amazing no-look grab. Uh-huh. Amazing and lucky.
Why don't we rank the three of them? Like, what you think it's the most? I think it's the number one amazing.
I'll agree with you, yeah.
Number one amazing.
Number two lucky?
Two lucky, three bad. Because...
Well, the route is pretty...
But like, once you get off to a bad start on the route, like, you just got to recover somehow.
Yeah, I mean...
You're done right away.
My whole life is... People have told me it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So right. He came through. So that's all that matters.
So you're going amazing right. Lucky, bad?
Yeah. Are you cool with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Add Tim and friends if you disagree.
It is all three.
It is all three. Jesse Fuchs was upset at this.
Because he was getting love for the catch, and he thought it was just a bad play.
Yeah, he thought it was a bad play because he's a baseball player, Jesse.
Yeah.
And he wanted the better route to the ball. It's the old Kevin Pillar argument, right?
Yeah.
Where people were saying all these spectacular catches are because he takes bad routes to the ball. Still spectacular catch.
Yes.
Okay?
Yep.
So I'm with you on this one. But it has kind of spurred on a little bit of a match game.
Of course it has. Hunter Renfrow's catch was the luckiest thing I've seen since blank. Hunter Renfrow's catch was the luckiest thing I've seen since. Randy Johnson nailed that seagull with his fastball at home plate. Wait, maybe that was more sad than lucky.
I'll tell you, it wasn't lucky for the seagull.
No, definitely not. That was like the anniversary was like 2 days ago. That was one of the craziest things that ever happened. That
well, that's why Josh said it. He was reminded of it a couple days ago because everyone saw it.
Hunter Renfrow's catch was the luckiest thing I've seen since just Bill Daly. Yeah, that's the Oilers. Yeah. That was 2015. Mike says Hunter Renfrow's catch was the luckiest thing I've seen since Tim winning his bet with Cabbie and not having to eat beef penis pizza.
I'm good with that one.
Calvin, Hunter Renfrow's Calvin, you don't want to sour the relationship now with seven shows to go or whatever it is.
You know what? He's right. If it wasn't lucky, why did I react the way I reacted? Do you still have the video
of it? Can
we
try that again?
Available?
Can we try that again?
I think when I did it, I said I would never try it again because that's just stupid.
Yeah, you hit like it in the one shot. Ending, so why not? Right. What's the worst that happens? You try it 10 times.
I'll try it one more time before the show. And do we need Sid here for
amazing,
me to do it?
Bad, and sad. Or amazing, bad, and lucky. And we'll judge which one it is.
Well, what bad part is that?
Well, I'm saying when you try it 10 times, you miss 10 times in a row.
My barrel hanging over my belt? Is that the bad part of that?
Last one. Harry says, Hunter Renfrow's catch was the luckiest thing I've seen since. Ken Reed winning the Picto Coleman Country Club Juvenile Championship. Very good. That's a good closer. Send them in if you have them, match game. Thank you, Hunter Renfrow, for giving us that material. We go to hockey, though. The Oilers got a big win last night. 2-0 over the Kings as Edmonton moved past LA for second place in the Pacific Division. The Oilers have earned at least a point in 9 straight games. How impressed have you been with their recent play?
Pretty impressed. I mean, this one's different because we know they can outscore teams. Mm. And so when you see Stuart Skinner did in between the pipes last night for the Edmonton Oilers, you start thinking, okay, we know they can outscore teams. Can they win games like that in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. What's going on over there today?
No, I'm fine. But you saw what just happened. My pen was like this, and all of a sudden it just flew off. No, I'm good, though.
You're good?
But yeah, your point is 100% right. Like, you know what they are.
Here's the numbers, okay? And I saw this from, these are the March stats. I saw this from Sportsnet Stats yesterday. Stuart Skinner in March, looking good. Listen, Oilers franchise record for most wins in a single month.
Yep.
He goes 10-1 in the month of March. But the goals against average isn't ridiculous. The save percentage isn't ridiculous. Like 283 and 908, like if you got the league averages, they're not far off of those numbers. It's that they've outscored everybody. It's that they've looked really good. And I'm not trying to nitpick wins. What I'm trying to make the point is when they win the 6-4 game, I wonder how translatable is that to when it matters most. But when they win the 2-0 game, that's the ticket right there. Because if they win a few of those in the postseason, they're going to be really tough to beat.
Yeah.
By the way, did anyone else kind of sort of like when Connor McDavid hit Mikey Anderson very hard from behind?
Yeah.
I know he left the game, and I don't wish injury upon anyone.
Good caveat. It's important.
Make sure I put that in there? Okay. Yeah. But Connor McDavid kind of sort of standing up for himself. Like, listen, Mikey Anderson was a pain in the ass in the postseason last year. That's not a hit that you want to see in the National Hockey League. But for me, given the two guys and given what could happen in a postseason, for Connor to kind of stand up for himself when it doesn't really matter all that much, although the top three teams in the Pacific are separated by 3 points, so it might mean a better matchup or home ice or whatever you want to say. I just, something about me smiled when I saw that.
Oh, because he deals with it like nobody else in the league. The slashing, the holding, the hooking. It's the only way to slow him down, right? Like a lot of it gets called, but a lot of it doesn't. And after a while, eventually you're going to want to fight back a little bit. I know that's what your teammates are supposed to be for, but there's not really enforcers anymore. So sometimes you do have to stick up for yourself.
But the history of hockey is littered with fans being happy to see their superstar stand up for themselves. Like, you got to go back to, like, well, listen, everybody had to stand up for themselves in like the 50s, 60s, 70s. Yeah. And then the goons started coming along to attempt to protect the superstars on the ice. But for some reason, everyone smiles when that happens. And to be honest with you, I was like, all right, good for you, Connor McDavid.
Remember we jumped on the Ottawa bandwagon when they were making their push?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm since off that bandwagon because they're not going to make the playoffs. But the Oilers, I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Wait a second. What? Sens look good again last night.
I know. It's like, I'm just saying. It's like healthy. It's like a 2% chance.
Okay.
That's so the you're odds me are not in
so
our
you're
favor.
Telling me there's a chance.
Yeah, there is a chance, but it's not a good one. All and that's why I'm pivoting a little bit to the Oilers because I think they
What about the Jets and the Flames? Because
If they can get in, I think they're both capable of doing damage just because of the way that they're built. I mean, we've talked about this, like good goaltending sometimes with the Flames. And the way that they're coached, especially Calgary, can shut it down if they get up. But Edmonton is just, they should be this good. They should be. They have two of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
Arguably the two best players.
Yeah, and that home deal was exactly what they needed. And we'll see if
they
get the goaltending in the place
Love it.
Postseason. If you gave them either one of those other goalies, well, maybe just Hellebuck. Jets at home to Detroit today, New Jersey on Sunday. Big game Wednesday versus Calgary. The Flames are at Vancouver tonight. Sunday, Anaheim, and again, big game Wednesday because they play the aforementioned team. Preds get the Blues tomorrow and Dallas on Monday.
Love it.
There is your update on the Western Conference wildcard standings.
Okay, as we continue here on First Things First, it is time to talk about the Toronto Raptors, who open a 5-game road trip tonight in Philly. You can see it on Sportsnet 1, starting with Raptors Central at 6:30 Eastern Time. The Raps are currently in ninth place in the East with 6 games remaining in the season. Playoffs coming quick. Play in. Meanwhile, Joel Embiid is having the best season of his career and is currently the favorite to win MVP. But do Nick Nurse and the Raptors know the secret to stopping Embiid?
You be the judge of that. I'll give you his career stats, which are the lowest versus any team in the NBA, 22.2 points per game. The 43.6% that he shoots against the Raptors is the lowest among all Eastern Conference opponents. And, of course, in the 2019 Eastern Conference semifinals, they did a job on him, although they means Marc Gasol.
Mm-hmm.
In his last 5 games versus the Raptors, he's shooting 50% and scoring 29 points a game. So was it Marc Gasol or was it the rest of the Raptors?
I think you just answered your own question.
33 points a game this year, shooting 54%.
Yeah, I actually think...
But Jakob Poeltl's going to go in there. Like, don't
discount...
Yeah,
I just don't know if he's...
That's different.
I'm not sure he's Marc Gasol defensively. Like, that's...
Well, I don't think anyone's Marc Gasol defensively, but I think Jakob Poeltl is way better than what they've had previously.
Yeah. So, that's a very good point. And Nick Nurse, I think... You've seen he has a tendency to really do well against other star players. When I look at, like, Giannis, for example, and how the Raptors play Giannis, like, they have a very specific defensive scheme against him. Like, they wall up and they go at him in, like, waves. Mm-hmm. And it makes Giannis's life miserable. And I just wonder, like, if they now have Poeltl, like, do you have sort of the same idea with Embiid, that you have these, like, different schemes that are creative and different ways to shut down star players? Because Nick Nurse has done it in the past. He's no stranger to being able to game plan against the best of the best. Just a matter of, are you going to let the supporting cast for the team you're playing beat you in? Is that too much to overcome? Because Philly's still really good outside of Embiid.
Here's too. The beauty.
Yeah.
You're about to find out tonight.
Love it.
Sportsnet 1. It is the Raptors and the Sixers. Alvin Williams will join us a little later on. And speaking of big men, congratulations to Toronto's Zach Edey, who is a near unanimous choice for the AP Men's College Basketball Player
Amazing.
Of the Year. And a little later on, I know that there are real basketball heads that already know this. We'll tell you why tonight is must-see TV for basketball, and it's not just the Toronto Raptors.
Okay. Excited.
Still to come. As mentioned, Alvin Williams from his hometown in the Philadelphia ahead of the Raptors and Sixers. Jesse gives us some Thank Golf It's Friday and Canadian in contention, eh, Jesse? Plus, after the break, more on the Jays' wild season opener and a look ahead to the weekend as former Jay Ricky Romero drops by next. Tim and Friends for a Friday.
And the Blue Jays win this wild game on opening day by a score of 10-9.
What a ball game. A little bit of everything.
On the track, at the wall, see ya! He picks up where he left off. A home run for Judge.
High fly ball to right from Peterson. Hit well. Renfro got turned around and somehow still made the catch. What was that?
A steal by McDavid. A breakaway. In on Corpusalo. He scores! 61 for the captain! And the 300th of his career!
Few days like opening day, and here a great setting in St. Louis as the Blue Jays open up the 2023 season against the Cardinals. Runners on the corners, and this ball is ripped into right field. Varsho, RBI double. Kurt, he can hit in his sleep, can he?
Blue Jays come up with a big start to this ball game.
That ball, one, track, one, it's gone! We got a ball game.
Kind of start to the season that Alek Manoah wanted. And now Guerrero with a great opportunity here. And he dumps one into right field. Bichette runs through the stop sign. It is 8-7 Blue Jays.
Swing drive down the left field line. Fair ball. Two runs will score.
This has been some kind of baseball game, hasn't it? This is plenty deep enough. And the Blue Jays have taken the lead. Jordan Romano retires the Cardinals in order. And the Blue Jays win this wild game on opening day by a score of 10-9.
Wacky and wild stuff as the Jays survive. Get a win against the Cards. Day off today. They'll play 9 straight after this, weather permitting. Starting tomorrow, Blue Jays Central gets going. 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific. On Saturday, followed by the Jays and Cards with Kevin Gossman heading to the bump. Speaking of heading to the bump, fresh off a season opener in St. Louis, a man who headed to the bump as a season opener in both 2011 and 2012. Friend of the show from time, it is Ricky Romero. What's up, Ricky? How are you, man?
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
I'm very good. Jesse?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm good. Just biting my lip over here.
Yeah. Do you remember those starts that I speak of very well in 2011 and 2012?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still talk about them all the time. I mean, Tim, we never made the playoffs when I was there. So these were definitely some of the career highlights of my career there in Toronto. No, but honestly, anytime you get to start opening day there and in a Blue Jays uniform, and you know how much it means to the city of Toronto, the party that goes on is awesome. It's different on the road. On the road, it's like you're kind of living by the home team's kind of schedule and you don't know when to get ready. It kind of takes you a little bit off your game. But at home, I mean, you feel the energy, you feed off the crowd. I remember in 2011 just going out there I always talk about this. It was when I was walking out of the tunnel and you just hear the crowd going, Ricky, Ricky, Ricky. That's where I was like, man, like goosebumps everywhere. I felt like I was floating when I was warming up. I was so much adrenaline. And I just remember we put up a lot of runs in the first inning, I think against Carl Pavano, I want to say. And then it just kind of eased off from there. And I was kind of cool, calm, and collected and was able to get the win and do well for the team.
Jays beat the Twins 13-3. Ricky Rowe, 6 1/3, 7 hits, one earned run, though they did score a 3. 7 Ks, no walks. And then on the road, as you mentioned, a little different. You guys got the win. 7-4 the final. You play to win the game, to quote Herm Edwards. 5 innings, 3 hits, 4 runs. There was a couple walks in there. Do you think that may have had something to do with Manoah being a little off? Because this guy's been a horse. I mean, the quality starts last year. Do you think maybe perhaps that played into the fact that we didn't see classic Alek Manoah yesterday? Was on the road?
Maybe. I mean, it's his first one, too. So there's a lot of jitters going on there. You know, let's face it, the St. Louis Cardinals is a pretty deep lineup. I mean, when you look at that lineup from top to bottom, I mean, it, you know, from Donovan to Goldschmidt to Arenado to Contreras and Tyler O'Neill, it's a pretty good lineup. And he was facing a tough challenge. And maybe it did. I thought it was a little bit interesting that he was calling his own game because he's usually, you know, it's usually Kirk who calls the game. And he obviously had the little pitch com thing on his glove, which I thought it was pretty interesting. And I wonder if that kind of threw him off a little bit. But other than that, I mean, it's one game. I think that the biggest thing with him is how he bounces back. I'm looking forward to his next start and see how he goes out there and shows us he can dominate and be the Alek Manoah that we're accustomed to seeing.
Obviously, the pitch com is a result of the pitch clock. How does that alter your mindset in a game when you just look for the fingers coming down there as opposed to doing it yourself?
Yeah, what I was thinking, and I was sitting here kind of wondering why he did it, and I'm like, maybe he did it because he didn't want to shake off Kirk and then run into the situation where maybe he gets called for a violation. So there's all these factors that probably went in. But at the end of the day, as you know, Roy Halladay, Mark Burley always taught me, they're like, man, whatever the catcher puts down, I trust and I go with it. And it's all about execution. That's what the game of pitching is. If you execute, it can be the perfect pitch and you might get an out or the guy might hit it out. You just never know in this game. So I feel like he's going to go back to the drawing board, maybe do things a little bit different. I'd be interested to see if he does go back to the pitch com or if he says, you know what, Kirky, I trust you. Let's go. Whatever finger you put down, I'm just going to go with it and see where it takes him for next game.
All right, so going into this year, I had a little more optimism than most because I thought, listen, if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was the 8th most valuable player on this team last year, given the war numbers, and Bo Bichette kind of was slow getting out of the gate, this could be a way different offense over the entire year if they just get out clean. One game does not make a season. I'm not trying to say that in any way, shape, or form, but that one game, they looked pretty damn good, didn't they, Ricky?
Oh, yeah, they did. I mean, offensively, there's so much firepower top to bottom. And then when you add Varsho, you add Kiermaier. I mean, Kiermaier is a solid veteran, man. And you can just tell he's just comfortable in whatever role you put him in. And then, I mean, Whit Merrifield, too, another guy. He went 0-3, but he's a pro's pro, man. Like, he's going to come around. Matt Chapman, to me, I mean, he's from my alma mater, Cal State Fullerton, and I always, you know, will always root for him, and I just feel like he's due for a big year. I think last year, obviously, we caught some glimpses, but I think this is his year where he breaks out in Toronto. And again, I mean, when you look at the defensive outfield, I mean, how can you not be excited about that as a pitcher? Like I was watching it when I was watching the game last night, I was like, man, this is cool. Like as a pitcher, you feel comfortable that anything that gets hit in the gaps, it's gonna get caught. And I had the pleasure of you know, playing with one of the best center fielders in baseball at the time in Vernon Wells. And the way he would cut the gaps and make plays is was pretty awesome. So now you got guys, you know, you got a young guy in Varsho, and then obviously Kiermaier, who's a veteran, and then you got George Springer, who's a true center fielder, and he's making plays out in right field. So I think you got a bunch of athletes out there that are going to go get it, and I think that's a huge, huge plus for the Toronto Blue Jays.
It's funny. You don't often talk about defense after a 10-9 game, but there were a lot of defensive plays that, had they not been made, the Jays lose that game.
Yeah, a lot, and a lot of smart plays, too. A lot of, you know, we saw the Varsho highlight right there where he kept the runner. You know, he was thinking about throwing to home plate, and then he kind of kept the runner at first base instead going into second base. And you just see stuff like that, little things like that, that the naked eye might not catch right away. And then when you think about it, you're like, whoa, that was a big play of the game. If that doesn't happen, then, like you said, they lose the game.
Yeah, Vlade Guerrero made a great play. After Bo Bichette, there was a little Bo bobble where he decided to go for two with the bases loaded instead of going home, and everyone's questioning it. And then right after, Vladdy makes a great play, which was even tougher than the Bo play, and cuts off a run at home plate. What's the difference? Listen, the number now is 47-28 under John Schneider. But what's the difference between taking over midseason and then having your own spring and your own opener as a skipper?
Oh, I think it's big. I mean, I think he runs the camp however he wants to run it. And from everything that I heard, Buck Martinez talked about it yesterday, saying that he ran a great camp and he was comfortable. He got even more comfortable with the guys. It's different, right? When you're sitting in that skipper's chair in that skipper's office, and you're the one that's writing out the plans, and you got the great Don Mattingly next to you, man. I mean, what can go wrong, right? I mean, yeah, I think John Schneider was made for this type of job. He was, you know, again, we've talked about this before. He's a guy that paid his dues, knows the organization from top to bottom. He's been there for so many years, and now he gets to run his show. It just seems like the guys are buying into whatever it is that he's bringing to the table, which is go out there, let's win, and some wins might get ugly, others might be, you know, 10-0, but last night was one of those ugly good wins, right? I mean, you don't want to ever give up 9 runs, but hey, if you come out on top, that's all that matters.
There is a bit of a depleted bullpen, but the day off helps today. And then tomorrow you go Kevin Gausman versus Jack Flaherty. A lot of people wondered with the toe tap if Gausman would be affected. But the early results in spring look like he dealt with it pretty well.
Yeah, no, he was awesome, man. And I mean, the Blue Jays could have gone one or two ways, right? They could have started Gausman yesterday on opening day, you know, and I think this is it's a great problem to have. You have two aces on the team with the potential of having maybe three. You know, I still believe Jose Berrios has that potential. But to me, Kevin Gausman, I mean, he's one of the guys that's obviously a dark horse to win probably a Cy Young, and rightfully so. I mean, he's unbelievable, man. That changeup is so nasty, or split change, whatever it is that they call it. I mean, I feel like they call it different things every time he goes out there. But I mean, the way he spots up, the way he goes about his business, he's fun to watch. So I'm really excited for him in this season and see how he performs out there. And like I said, it would not surprise me if he goes out there and wins the Cy Young.
Okay, so we've got Manoah, we've got Gausman, and I know not everyone watches spring training, so maybe they hadn't seen a lot of Chris Bassitt. Sometimes you don't watch those West Coast games, you don't see a lot of Chris Bassitt. Tell me what the Jays are going to, or Jays fans are going to see in Chris Bassitt, who gets the call in Game 3 on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that kind of has come up, been up and coming as of like later in his career, and I think you're gonna see a guy that's controlled, that goes out there and attacks hitters, and I think that's the one thing you want to see. You want to see him going out there and not changing who he is because he's in a different uniform this year, or trying to impress everyone because he's in a Blue Jay uniform now. It's just, hey, go be Chris Bassitt, go out there, go hit your spots, go give us a chance to win with that team behind us, that lineup behind us. You just need to be yourself, and I think you're gonna see him just be the Chris Bassitt that they signed him from the New York Mets, and which is a controlled guy, guy that's gonna pitch to contact with some velocity in there, and he's another guy that I'm excited for. I mean, when they brought him in, I was like, man, like that solidifies this rotation. And obviously when you have Berrios as the number four, obviously he's coming off a tough year. Kikuchi, who had an unbelievable spring. I mean, I feel like we're all excited to see what he can do out of that fifth spot. So Toronto Blue Jays are running out five starters that can carry them a very, very long way this season.
Always appreciate talking baseball with you. And I still got a few connects, and I'm being told that in the Southern California area, there is no better Little League coach than one Ricky Romero. And those great twos and ones are really playing a finely tuned game in the L.A. area. Thanks for doing this. And you got one today?
Absolutely. We do. We have a game right now in about an hour and a half at 4:30 our time. So
okay.
I'm excited. I have them 4-0 right now. We're playing another undefeated team. It should be excited.
Look at this.
The boys are like really looking forward to it. So I'm really excited.
So am I. Appreciate it. As always, Ricky.
Absolutely.
Always great talking to you.
Always. Thank you.
All right. There is Ricky Romero in California enjoying his little league. Hey,
he's the man.
Adam Wainwright's anthem.
Loved it.
Loved it.
Loved it.
So he surprised the entire team. Nobody knew it was going to be the star of the show, mm-hmm. Adam Wainwright, walking over mm-hmm. to sing that anthem. I mean, like, not a professional, but for a pretty damn good starting pitcher, not bad.
Like, passable. There's a lot of country singers that are actually worse than that. I'll just say. And it had a little bit of a country feel, so. Right.
Could you sing the national anthem?
I could do it, I think. But I'd probably choke, for being honest.
All right.
I'd probably choke.
Time for a break. But fast approaching is Masters Week. Jesse can hardly contain his excitement.
That's right.
But we'll try. We'll ask him to bring a little thank off It's Friday. Corey Connors in the mix at the Valero Open back after this. Oh, see.
You'd be good. You.
Welcome back to Tim and Friends. It is Friday. Jesse is here. Thank God it's Friday.
Oh, love it. Just so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Despite the snow and the rain that was outside. We have the Masters coming up next week, which obviously I cannot wait for. Listowel, Ontario's Corey Connors is someone that's had pretty great success, actually, at Augusta National. Last three tournaments, T6, T8, T10. And if this week's Valero Texas Open is any kind of barometer for Connors, he may be in the mix once again.
Great.
Let's have a look.
Striker. He's a great ball
great
striker.
Great ball striker.
Yeah.
Not good. Great. Entered the round with a two-shot lead, starting on the back nine, par 3, 13th tee shot. That's not great. Finds the sand, leads to his first bogey of the tournament. That took a while. Falls to 7-under, par 5, 14th, Connors.
Best Canadian ball striker since Mo Norman?
That's a great shout-out. Yes, yeah. I think so.
Maybe?
I think that's right.
With all due respect to Mike Weir?
Yeah, no, I do think
Jim
that's...
Jim Nelford?
I like it.
Yeah?
Struggling on the green. Ooh.
Dave Barr?
This is the short putt.
Dan Halderson.
That Mo Norman. Yeah. Oh, this is.
Uh-oh.
These are some bad misses. You know, I mean, I would miss them too. So who am I to talk? But some short misses.
But you're not a pro.
I'm not a pro. No. This one, way right, almost hitting fans, almost hitting Marshall. I mean, yesterday went well, but today not so much. Second round, 72, sits three shots off the lead, heading into the weekend. I like that. I like country. Put Adam Wainwright in one of those.
That's a big hat. Though.
Yeah, it's a
That's
big
more
hat.
Than a 10-gallon.
It's a big hat. All right, so Connors is
just
three off the lead. Nick Taylor also in the mix, T8, as you see there. So Connors, it's nice to see him. Not today didn't go great, obviously, but it's nice to see him and Nick Taylor playing well ahead of Augusta, because that should be fun. What are you doing?
It's funny. It's a big hat, Alex. Big hat.
Yeah.
Turd Ferguson?
Yeah, no, I got
Saturday Night Live?
I got it.
Burt Reynolds?
No, I got it.
Norm MacDonald?
Got it. There you go. Norm MacDonald's the man. okay, so I wanted to bring something up to you about the LIV Golf situation. So apparently, mm-hmm. what's happening with LIV Golf, obviously these guys signed for massive amounts of money. Now, there are reports out there indicating mm-hmm. that if any of the LIV golfers decided to leave that tour and wanted to go back to the PGA Tour, then they would have to pay between 2 and 4 times the amount of money that they signed their signing bonus for. So for just an example, say Brooks Koepka, which I believe he did, signed a $100 million signing bonus.
Mm-hmm.
He could have to pay $400 million.
Well, he's not going to
leave
$400 million. But it's shocking that making a deal with the Saudis may come back to bite the shocking. I mean, who would have thought that that would be the case? That if you signed a deal with a rogue golf tour that was offering you $100 million just to show up, it may be too good to be true.
So,
if there's one thing your dad told you growing up, it was, Jesse, beware of things that are too good to be true.
Yeah.
And especially beware of them if they come from nefarious places.
Yes. What I want to know, so most of these deals were signed for like 2 or 3 years.
Right.
I want to know what happens when the deal is actually over. Like, is it done there? Like, is it just going to be honored and everyone's going to go their separate ways if they actually do want to live? Like,
weren't there also like reports out there? And I don't know this. You're the golf guy. Weren't there reports that some guys hadn't received all of their signing bonuses and that things were being kind of sort of held back?
Yes, but they're
wasn't
not
as good as it seemed.
There's nothing like too official, it seems, coming out. But they are having issues. They laid off a bunch of production staff.
Yeah, I saw that.
So the ratings obviously have not been good. So
no, not good at all.
Not a great situation. But at least we have the Masters coming up, and everyone will be together as one big happy family.
By the way, shout out Mon Ami LeBlanc, who is 8 under at the LA Open, just 2 shots off the pace, currently in third. So some Canadian content on both sides, and hopefully Mon Ami can hang around a little bit longer. All right, after the break, we'll visit with Ryan Leslie in Vancouver, Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg, ahead of a couple of huge games for the Flames and the Jets. Plus, we head to the gym in Philadelphia. Alvin Williams joins us to tee up the Raptors and the Sixers next on Tim and Friends.
Tim and Friends, time for Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends, time for Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends.
And now, time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and Friends of the Show.
Thank you very much. Sheep Dogs back here. Final half hour of the week here on Tim and Friends Still to Come. Alvin Williams will join us from Philadelphia, head of the Raptors and Sixers. What's up?
I just did like kind of just.
Oh, did you do it double guns?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, nice.
I don't. Yeah.
Can you? No.
I've just never done that. I've never done that before.
You made a beep,
took
beep,
two
beep,
plus
beep,
years
beep,
for
beep.
Me to give a little finger.
Oh,
guys.
Yeah, it took 2 years.
He's very like.
Finally,
half
the true measure, Jesse comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, boom, 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 boom. See, it was just a little like not.
It's better than double birds.
Yeah, definitely.
Raptors and Sixers, a game you can see on Sportsnet 1 tonight. Meantime, Hockey Central will follow us on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360. 4 games in the NHL tonight, including really important games west of where we sit here in Toronto. In Vancouver, it is the Canucks hosting the Flames. The Canucks continuing to play well with wins in 10 of their past 13 games. The Flames have won 2 straight and enter the night 2 points back of the Jets, 7 games to go. You can see the Flames broadcast nationally on Sportsnet East and West, with the Canucks broadcast nationally on Sportsnet Pacific and Ontario. Take your pick, kids. With more in Vancouver, let's check in with Ryan Leslie. Ryan?
Yes, hard to believe that the Calgary Flames, Tim, are still very much in this thing. You mentioned 2 points back of Winnipeg. They've won 2 in a row, the Calgary Flames have, and they learned a lot from that game against Los Angeles about the way they want to play. Maybe a little extra momentum, given the fact that they had now, against Vancouver, have a chance to win their 3rd straight, something that they haven't done, remarkably, since the first week of December. Hard to believe that they are still very much in this playoff conversation, given that they haven't gone in any runs or had real momentum for any streaks over a long period of time. But here they are now, a chance to take on the Vancouver Canucks, who are playing great hockey, as you mentioned. And certainly this is a must-win situation once again for Calgary. It's an optional practice, so we didn't get a good look at who was going to be in the lineup tonight, but we expect that Chris Tanev, the former Canuck, will once again be out of the lineup. He'll miss his 5th straight. And the goaltending matchup, former Canuck Jacob Markstrom goes head-to-head with Thatcher Demko. Tim.
Thank you, Ryan. As mentioned, the Flames 2 points back at the Jets in the race for the final wild card spot. Predators mixed in as well. Wheels have been kind of sort of slowly falling off the Jets for a while, including an ugly loss to the Sharks last time out. Can they recover in time to salvage the playoff spot? Well, they host the Wings tonight in a game that feels like they gotta have it. They start a 5-game homestand, including games with the Flames and Preds. Let's check in. Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg live. Sean, can you feel a little angst in the market?
I think you'd have to look far and wide, Tim, in the city of Winnipeg to find knuckles that weren't white, because everyone is clinging figuratively onto this playoff spot as hard as they can. You know, I'm going to echo Ryan Leslie and say I'm surprised. I kind of can't believe that the Calgary Flames remain in this, but it's because the Winnipeg Jets just can't figure things out. And I'm going to tell you this, Tim, until this last game, the Calgary Flames, they beat the LA Kings. I didn't see that coming. The Winnipeg Jets, they lost to the San Jose Sharks. I didn't see that coming. It wasn't until that moment that I started thinking there's a real chance that the Jets could fall out of this. Now, they still statistically have a better advantage in this because they have the tiebreaker and they're 2 points up. It's hard to make up 3 points in seven games, but it's not impossible. Yeah. Here's the deal. The Calgary Flames, of all their games remaining, they only play one team over the playoff line, and that's the Winnipeg Jets that they can reel in, whereas the Jets, with seven games left, they've got games against teams like the New Jersey Devils, the Minnesota Wild, yeah, the Colorado Avalanche. They've got a game against the Nashville Predators and the Calgary Flames. Those are tough ones. So if you're looking at must-win games or games that they really need to get, they've got one left against San Jose, and they've lost to them twice so far this year. And then tonight against Detroit, there's really not a lot of room for error. Detroit with a big win last night, but the Jets are catching them on back-to-back. I agree with you, Tim. This is a game the Winnipeg Jets have to have.
Okay, so they got to have this one, and I know that everyone's kind of nervous about what's going to happen over the last seven games and then if they get to the postseason, but is there also a lot of angst about what happens in the offseason depending on what happens in those seven or more games left?
Well, I don't think I'd describe it as angst. I mean, this Winnipeg Jets team, it's one of the things we showed in the first game of the year since 2017-18 when they went on that great run. The Jets have got worse every single year since then. Now, I know people always look at the Winnipeg Jets, and they've said this for years, and Tim, you know, people in Toronto will get a hold of me and say, you know, how about those Jets? They look like they're capable of doing a lot. Yes, they've always looked capable of doing a lot, but their results have gone down year after year after year until they fell out of the playoffs last year. If they fall out of the playoffs this year, it will be one of the most monumental slides we have ever seen in the history of the NHL. Two straight years out of the playoffs with a whole bunch of expiring contracts. To me, I don't know that there's angst in the market, and I think it makes it pretty obvious if this happens, there's nowhere for this organization to go but towards a rebuild. I don't know if they go deep into a rebuild or try and retool on the fly, but something has to change here in Winnipeg, because if they get the same results as they got last year after, you know, a new coach and such a good start, there's something that needs to be addressed here, and it's going to take drastic action to address it.
I was going to do the old I always appreciate you being a friend, seeing as we only got eight shows left, but I got a feeling Wednesday you and Ryan Leslie might be on this show with me, given the magnitude of what could be next Wednesday.
I always look forward to my spots on Tim and Friends. You know that.
I do. Thanks for joining us. There is Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg getting you set for the Jets and the Wings. Meanwhile, in basketball, the Raptors starting a crucial five-game road trip in Philadelphia tonight. See it at Sportsnet 1, starting with a pregame at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific. So less than a half an hour from now, the Raptors look like a certainty for the play-in tournament. But end of the night, tie with the Hawks for 8th and 9th. Hoping to be in the 7-8 game when the dust settles. Here's Nick Nurse on what he's looking for over the last six games of the regular season.
This team needs playoff experience, right? So that is where I'm at right now. And I think since February 1, we got the third best record in the league, which isn't too bad. I think we got a top five defense, which is what we're trying to get to, playing some pretty good basketball. So finish out these six, see where we land, see if we can't creep up a spot or two in the standings, right? And then give them hell in the playoffs and see if we can get in a real series and take it from there.
There is Nick Nurse, and it was the Firm in an OG classic called Phone Dap that once asked what the dilly. I just touched ground down in Philly. For that, I go to Alvin Williams, who is on the ground in Philly, giving us the dilly. What up, Alvin? How are you, man?
What's you always reciting that Nas? That's, you know, that's Nas right there. Just touchdown in Philly. You know, I'm with you right there. We see each other. We see each other eye to eye.
I did not bring a pound with me, so I'm just going to leave that line alone and move on. Alvin Williams, you brought your game, and we wonder if the Raptors brought their game. This is a tough task, and for some reason, this squad has been different on the road. Do you have any good rational explanation for why the Raptors have been pretty damn good at home and not so much on the road?
You know, I mean, typically a lot of the teams are not doing as well on the road for whatever reason, but there's a lot of variables. And especially in today's NBA, when you have a lot of lineup changes, certain players are in, certain players are out, depending on the schedule. So I really can't pinpoint and look at a game and say, this Raptors team, they don't play it this certain way when they're on the road. They play with a lack of energy or togetherness. I can't say that. But you can say these teams at home are better across the NBA. A lot of the teams are just better teams. And just walking in on a home court advantage or whatever is not going to be an easy walk no matter who you are. Even some of the top teams, they're losing on the road at a higher rate than they've been traditionally. So I can't point out one thing.
Is it like, is it rims? Is it comfortability? Is it the own bed? Like, does that have anything to do? They're all 10 feet, I've been told.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's the rims. The rims are still, I think they still have the same diameter, and yeah, the baskets are, everything's the same. But I think at the end of the day, when you have an offensive-driven NBA,
right,
offense, no matter what, it goes up and down. And especially on the road, that's when your offense may not match where it typically is at home. So if you don't have your defense playing at a high level consistently, then you're not going to give yourself that many chances to win on the road. So you always have to take care of the ball, you have to rebound the basketball, and you have to have a consistent level and a high level of defense to give yourself an opportunity to win consistently on the road.
Not just Al's hometown, where he is uber famous, but also did some work with the Sixers and did some work with Joel Embiid as a youngster. Alvin, is he the MVP this year?
I like him a lot as the MVP, just pretty much where you looked at the Philadelphia 76ers. And just being here in Philly, you know, the fans here, they expect the Sixers and every team to win every home team to win a championship. But the Sixers didn't start out that hot. And people were doubting if Doc Rivers was the guy, if Joel Embiid can lead this team, is he going to be healthy? But he's exceeded everything. I think he's been very consistent, although he's missed 14 games, but he's the leading scorer in the NBA. And the way he's just controlling the basketball games, being that dominant person in the paint and still being that skillful person that can score on the outside and do so many things. So it's hard for a defense to really lock in. So his impact on the game on both sides, offensively and defensively, for me, gives him the nod this year as the NBA MVP.
You know, we were talking earlier in the show about the Raptors' ability to slow him down. A lot of that had to do with some size that they've had in the past. Marc Gasol obviously did a wonderful job defending him on the way to the championship. They were able to mix and match with Serge Ibaka and Gasol. Do the Raptors have that same sort of versatility with the addition of Jakob Poeltl, Alvin?
I think it gives people and everyone else an opportunity to guard their natural positions and not be overmatched. Last game against the Sixers here in Philly, Scottie Barnes started out guarding Joel Embiid and picked up two quick fouls because it's just no matchup for him. It's too big for Scottie, and Scottie's young. But when you have a Jakob Poeltl who can put other people in their natural positions and battle, even though it's still going to be a struggle for Jakob Poeltl because he's no Marc Gasol, I think, defensively, but the Raptors have done a very good job of sending double teams at different positions on the floor, different ways, whether they come from the baseline, whether they come after one dribble. They really have thrown different looks at Joel Embiid, which has been very effective for the Raptors. Now what they're doing with the Sixers, they're giving the ball to Joel Embiid at different spots of the floor where it's hard to double them. So the Raptors are going to have to figure that out, because Joel Embiid is doing a much better job of finding his teammates, but more importantly, catching the ball in positions where he can't get double as often.
For those looking for this, Raptors Sixers is on Sportsnet 1. Pregame starting in just over 15 minutes from now. You mentioned Scottie Barnes starting out guarding Joel Embiid the last game. It looks like we've seen glimpses of the rookie of the year, the guy who we thought was on a trajectory that was going to take him to at least stardom. Have we seen more of that lately, Alvin?
No, for sure. He's settling in to the person that we thought he was going to be early on. But once again, as a youngster, it's hard to figure it out. It's going to take time. We've seen the greatest of the greatest. Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, all these guys had to figure out going to different levels. And Scotty is no different. Scotty is someone who has an ability. He has a great IQ at a young age, facilitates, pass the ball. He has a great feel. Now it's about putting everything together. And over time, he's going to figure it out. His teammates are going to acclimate it to him. Coaches are going to have to adjust to him because he's definitely that talented. And he's going to have to grow. He's got to grow himself off season and during the season, just taking that next step. So I still believe, I'm a heavy believer in Scotty to being that ultimate talented guy that I know he is.
I'm seeing Pascal Siakam behind you giving daps and head taps to everybody. Is that someone he can look to figure out how to kind of take those next steps to that level?
Nah, for sure. When you look at a Pascal Siakam and see where he came from watching a Kawhi Leonard, watching a Kyle Lowry, watching a DeMar DeRozan, just because your game doesn't, you know, mirror that particular person, they still have a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge from other people. Like, I can't tell you how to score 40 points a game, but I watched the Kobe Bryant, I watched an Allen Iverson, I watched guys, I played with a Vince Carter, I saw how they prepared, I saw how they did things, so I can give you from their lens. But that's the value when you have players and they come along because of the tradition that the Raptors are creating. Great players have come in here. Pascal have learned, Fred VanVleet have learned, and Scotty now is up to him to learn. And hopefully those older guys, they'll give him the lessons, they'll give him the jewels that he'll need to take and go forward.
Was AI any good, Al?
No, he was all right. Where were we in Philly? He's all right. All right.
Listen, we only have seven shows after this one on Tim and Friends. One of my favorite teammates right here at Sportsnet, Alvin Williams. It had nothing to do with Tim and Friends. Shout out Halifax and U Sports Basketball and the time
we
spent together. Always appreciate you dropping by, though, on Tim and Friends and doing this. You are a friend always on this show, my friend.
No, I appreciate you. And since day one, man, you've accepted me, you put me in, you gave me some school, you learned me, you taught me, you did everything for me. Halifax, when are we going back?
Yeah, we should go back. Just had a little roadie.
Hey, a little guy's trip. It won't be not a bad idea.
No, not a bad idea. We'll bring Jesse along with us. We'll have ourselves a good time. Listen,
for sure.
Enjoy the hometown. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll be watching.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, there is Alvin Williams. In his hometown of Philadelphia. That's got to
so
be
well dressed,
cool.
Too.
Oh, just dapper man.
It's crazy.
Yeah, when we walked into a place in Halifax,
Yeah. Everyone
looked, you know, well dressed man, 6'4, got a little bit of a presence in him. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no question about it.
The Raptors have a little presence here as they turn down the stretch. Six games to go, five of them on the road. Do you think that eighth spotter is a big spot for them?
Yeah, I think they need to get into the 8-7 game. I think, Obviously, that would be preferable. That's kind of stating the obvious. But I just think because I feel like they're playing their best basketball maybe of the year at this current point in time, like last week or so, that has been the case. And that's all that matters. You got to go into the postseason or go into the play-in playing at your very best. And I think if they do that, and they are, then they will be in that 8-7 game, and that gives them the easiest road to actually get into the playoffs, where depending on the matchup could make a little bit of noise. I'm not sure how far they can actually go, but I think they can make a little bit of noise.
Kind of crazy the way it's broken down for the Raptors, that they finish Philly tonight, and then you go back to back Boston and Charlotte for your final four road games, and then final game of the season is at home where they've played better, but they've got to get a few wins along the way. Charlotte's played better of late, and of course Boston last night. I don't know if you watched any of that game, but they just handed it to Milwaukee in Milwaukee last night, winning by 41.
That's what's weird about the NBA nowadays. It's like, when would that ever have happened in the past? Where you'd have the two best teams in the East, and one team beats them by 40. Like, what is going on?
Well, coming off a loss to the Washington Wizards, too.
Like, what's going on? Is it because they shoot 43s a game, each team, and then when one team
hits it? Got something to do with it.
Like, that the margin of victory can oftentimes, you know, disguise that the game is actually closer than that. But
I also think that, like, Boston has a little bit more to prove because Milwaukee has the championship and Boston doesn't. I know last year it didn't work out that way. But I do think that Boston has a little bit more to prove. And listen, it's quite obvious when Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum get going. It's a really tough team to beat. And last night, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum got going, and it was a wash.
Like, I don't think like they're good. Obviously, those two teams are the best in the East, and the Sixers as well. I don't think they're that good, though. Like, you think of teams that have won titles in the past.
Yeah.
And I just don't think they're at that level. And I think they're prone to maybe a first-round upset.
I disagree with you.
I don't know if that comes at the hands of the Raptors, but I just don't know.
Vehemently.
Do you?
Disagree with you. I think they're the two best teams in the East. I don't even believe in the Philadelphia 76ers when it matters most.
How do you lose to the Wizards? I get that it's just one game. Yeah. It's like, how do you lose that game?
I'll give you this. I'll give you this. People forget Miami was one game away from going to the NBA Finals last year. Mm-hmm. Like, they took it to a lot of people thought Boston.
I forgot that. I forgot until you just said it.
Boston and Milwaukee played each other, and they thought that was the Eastern Conference Final. But no. Miami, Eastern Conference Final, and they went to a Game 7 and lost.
Maybe I'm just hyping up the playoffs. Anything can happen. Get into the dancing. You never know. You never know in any league.
In the West.
Okay.
In the East?
Fine.
Manano. All right, time for one last break. We will head to game time. Jesse Rubinoff will take care of you and me. Hockey Central also coming up. Raptor Central also coming up. Please don't go anywhere.
It's already game time? Oh, it's flying.
Welcome back to Tim and Friends. We always hoped that your game day would start with us. Here's what's on tap tonight. Hockey Central up next on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360. Then it's the Rangers and Sabres on Sportsnet. Raptors Sixers, Sportsnet 1. Just look in front of you. It's all there for your viewing pleasure. And if you're watching that wrestling stuff, we're getting close, Jesse. We're getting close. And I got a feeling there may be some storylines on Friday Night SmackDown on Sportsnet 360.
It's out. Well, Connor Bedard will get his first taste of playoff hockey with the Regina Pats as they open their best of seven series against the Saskatoon Blades tonight. The Pats
provincial battle
are back in the postseason for the first time since 2018, and to mark the occasion, the players all got fresh mullet haircuts. Bedard's mullet was inspired by Patrick Kane from the 2010 playoffs. He even took a picture of Kane with him to the barber.
Oh, yeah?
You a fan of the look?
I'm kind of jealous. I wish I had more of a skullet than a mullet. Yeah, understood.
We never ended up doing that bet, so I kind of got off scot-free because had I lost, then he wanted me to do some sort of
shaving of the old
dome
piece,
and
I would grow the hair out. Yeah, no, I think it looks pretty good. And let's be fair here. It's going to be interesting to see what Connor McDavid does. Freudian slip.
Freudian slip,
Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
I don't know. Connor Bedard does in the postseason because, listen, he was really good in the World Juniors. But you want to see how it translates, and the closest thing you can get to the NHL is playoff hockey in the WHL or the OHL or the CHL. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he does. Can he keep up the pace that had him score 71 goals in 57 regular season games? Probably not, but what kind of pace? Because let's not forget, he had 23 points in the World Juniors.
I know why you thought of McDavid.
Why's that?
Because we posted from our account Connor McDavid's brother.
Oh my God.
Cam McDavid.
It looks exactly like him, does it not?
This was why, first of all, I didn't even know he had a brother, so that's on me. Should have known that. But they
why
are.
Why should you know that?
I don't know. It's Connor McDavid, the greatest hockey player on earth. Should know a little bit more about him.
Okay.
But it's scary, is it not?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Connor McDavid's brother is just Connor McDavid with a different shirt.
Like, he's old. He's older, I believe.
Yeah.
But you would think that they're almost identical twins.
Yeah, pretty damn close.
Evidently, I learned today they are not.
Does Spencer not look like you?
Some people think he does. Some people don't. So I guess the answer is not enough that it matters.
The women's Final Four goes tonight in Dallas. LSU takes on Virginia Tech first game of the night. And then, man, is this a marquee matchup in the second game. South Carolina puts its undefeated record on the line against Iowa in a showdown of the two best players in women's college basketball. Real heads know that this is something you need to watch. Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark. Now, Clark recorded a 40-point triple-double in Iowa's last game. Now, AP Player of the Year yesterday. Everyone knows that this woman has to get the ball for Iowa to be good, and yet she still does what she does. And Clark's star power is one of the reasons why we're seeing an unprecedented level of interest in the women's game right now. Iowa's game against Louisville last Sunday drew almost 2.5 million viewers. That's more than any NBA game on ESPN this season.
What?
That's right. The Iowa Elite Eight game drew more viewers than any NBA game on ESPN, because that's where the game was on this year. Tickets for the women's Final Four are going for three times more the price of the men's Final Four in the secondary market, though it must be noted that they're playing in a smaller stadium as well, but it gives a little credence to the idea that there are some significant rises in interest, or there is a significant rise in interest in the women's basketball.
That is awesome. So we opened the show today showing the proposal on the field with the tackle.
At the Los Angeles Dodgers game, guy runs out there, goes down on bended knee. We thought he was kneeling to run out the clock. But when you realize...
He threw the flag.
Yeah, when you realize when the camera turns back...
We thought it was stupid. Maybe he was concussed after this. Whatever. The whole thing was a mess. Until we have a follow-up. She said yes. So there you go. Let's tie a nice little bow on that story. So he looks to be okay.
He's out of the drunk tank.
He's out of the drunk tank.
He's out of the hospital.
He is still drinking.
Yeah,
there's another beer.
Concussed, but there's still a beer there, yeah.
Oh, man, I guess, like, good for them. He did something illegal. There should be consequences.
What are you talking about? He's a true romantic.
Yeah, I know, but you can't.
He went out onto the field.
It's a PSA. Stop going on the field.
They look like a wonderful couple.
They look really happy. I know.
Just saw.
Congratulations.
All right, that's awesome. Good for them. Hockey Central, Carolyn Cameron, Luke Gazdick, Sam Cosentino. Coming up next on Sportsnet. Raptors Central on Sportsnet 1. Back next week.
Bye-bye.